terrorism has intensified.
Reviewing the year in U.S. foreign policy, it's Wednesday, December 29th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, warnings about the Taliban, where Hong Kongers are resettling, assessing pandemic response, the year in climate change, historic space exploration achievements. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden came into office with the message, America is back. And he promised that diplomacy would replace military power as the main instrument of U.S. foreign policy. VOA's Chief White House Bureau Correspondent Patsy Wiedekuswara has this recap of the U.S. President's policies abroad in his first year in office.
It's been quite a year in U.S. foreign policy, with the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan in August widely seen as the biggest failure of President Joe Biden's first year in office. Michael Kugelman is Senior Associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center.
Terrorism has intensified, and the Taliban takeover has led to sanctions that have put Afghanistan in a position where it has an acute humanitarian crisis that could well lead to mass famine. And I think that, this very precipitate, chaotic U.S. withdrawal is seen as linked to those outcomes.
The withdrawal is in line with the administration's goal to decrease military engagement in the Middle East. But challenges remain, including existing tensions between Israelis and Palestinians and the stalled effort to rescue the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, the 2015 Iran nuclear deal with world powers that the Trump administration withdrew from in 2018. Still, following years of America First under former President Donald Trump, Biden's message is that America is back.
We'll stand up for our allies and our friends and oppose attempts by stronger countries to dominate weaker ones, whether through changes to territory by force, economic coercion, technical exploitation, or disinformation. But we're not seeking, say it again, we are not seeking a new Cold War or a world divided into rigid blocks.
But Biden has drawn fault lines, what he calls the struggle between democracies and autocracies. He rallied more than 100 countries at a virtual summit for democracy in December, excluding Chinese President Xi Jinping and Russian President Vladimir Putin, whom he met virtually on separate occasions, reinforcing a key theme in his foreign policy doctrine. Stacey Goddard is a Mildred Lane Kemper Professor of Political Science at Wellesley College.
Global cooperation around complex issues like the environment and pandemics that require cooperation with China, that require cooperation with Russia. But on the other hand, also make trying to keep on this theme of the United States will cooperate with democracies. The United States is a democratic nation, and the United States does see an authoritarian challenge as a significant challenge.
China, now a major adversary in military might and geopolitical influence, is Biden's foreign policy priority. But Russia, another rival, is not staying on the sidelines, mobilizing tens of thousands of troops along the Ukrainian border. Andrew Lawson is fellow in the Europe, Russia, and Eurasia program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Russia is not a solved problem. It's still a major actor that has interests that are divergent with the United States and our European allies. And so it really can't be put in a box. I think what we're seeing here is some behavior from the Russian Federation to remind the United States that it's still there, it still has interests that it wants to pursue, and that those interests can't be ignored.
Another unsolved problem is North Korea, where the administration is unwilling to cut a deal unless Kim Jong-un commits to winding down his nuclear weapons program. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. North Korea's Kim reportedly convenes major party meeting ahead of New Year. Witnesses say Taliban fired warning shots on Afghan female protesters. Lawsuits and media killings in India are curtailing press freedom, experts say. Taliban arrest head of private TV network. Relief group says two members killed in Myanmar violence. Find complete coverage on all these stories on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia on this Wednesday. A former Afghan army officer is in the United States now. He fled Afghanistan after the Taliban takeover and has a warning about them. Breshna Tariq reports for VOA.
Shaista Khan, a former Afghan army officer, and his family have just arrived in San Diego, California. They're among thousands of Afghans evacuated from Afghanistan after the Taliban took over the country. Khan says that it was painful to see Kabul fall to the Taliban on August 15.
It was a very painful day for Afghans, particularly for those in the military. I will never forget the moment we were removing our military uniforms, particularly my epaulets.
Afghanistan's National Defense and Security Forces, a 300,000-strong force, collapsed in the face of the Taliban's offensive. The Taliban granted a general amnesty to former government employees, including the security forces. But human rights group accused the Taliban of extrajudicial killings and forced disappearances. Khan says the Taliban cannot be trusted.
Even now, the Taliban would kill someone who worked with the government, either as a military man or civilian. They are liars, and they're lying, and they will not keep their promises.
The United Nations has warned that Afghanistan is facing a profound human rights crisis and that the extrajudicial killings have increased across the country under the Taliban. Breshna Tariq for VOA News, San Diego, California.
Still to come on VOA Asia, where Hong Kongers leaving the territory are resettling. Happening now in Asia, laborers in India say they fear losing their jobs amid an extended lockdown after authorities in New Delhi imposed an indefinite night curfew that started on Monday at midnight. The move comes amid fears of the spread of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Hong Kong is experiencing an exodus of its residents leaving the Chinese territory to seek a new life elsewhere. The reasons why Hong Kongers want to leave vary, and so do the places they are considering as their new home. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the details.
At this immigration fair in Hong Kong, attendees are making life-changing decisions. Among them is Edwin Lai, who is looking for a more free and less expensive country, maybe Taiwan or Britain.
Hong Kong's living environment seems to be deteriorating, so I am looking for a better place where I can live a happier life.
One reason driving the exodus is the recent political changes in Hong Kong, say immigration consultants. China's 2020 national security law, implemented after months of pro-democracy demonstrations, has led to many arrests. China's People Daily says the law applies only to a very small number of criminals who endanger national security, and that it protects Hong Kong residents. But many Hong Kongers say the changes have transformed the Chinese territory.
There are much more restraints implemented in many areas, from freedom of speech to education. There are also many restrictions and many new laws and rules introduced.
The options outside of Hong Kong span the globe. The most popular destination, Britain, the country that colonized Hong Kong before returning the territory back to China in 1997. Janie Mew is a UK immigration specialist.
According to our own survey, I think that, you know, over 80 or even 90% of people, their top choice will be UK because the visa scheme is sort of the easiest.
Canada and Australia are also popular. Then there's Taiwan, an option close to Hong Kong for those with financial means, says immigration consultant Amanda Chiu.
Many people, maybe they sell their properties in Hong Kong or sell their business in Hong Kong, and then they can have a new investment there and start over.
Portugal is attractive for those who want to become EU citizens. Another option, Fiji in the South Pacific. Travel consultant Joe Lam.
The requirements are quite low. You can obtain a passport within a short period of time.
According to Hong Kong's Census and Statistics Department, 89,200 people, or 1.2% of the population, left from mid-2020 to mid-2021. The Hong Kong government says those numbers reflect border controls caused by the pandemic, where those who had left Hong Kong before the pandemic may have chosen to remain outside Hong Kong or cannot return. But immigration specialists say the number of inquiries has grown 10 times compared to last year. Bi Jie is spokesperson for the International Immigration and Property Expo.
I think the migration wave is not at its peak yet. Maybe in a year or year and a half, the number of people who leave may peak.
Again, Edwin Lai.
Frankly, if we can sort out everything, we would love to leave sooner if possible. But after all, I still need to think about my family and make arrangements for work.
With parents and children to think about, many attendees will need more planning before making a move. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Indonesian health authorities were conducting contact tracing on Tuesday after detecting the country's first case of the fast-spreading Omicron coronavirus variant in the community. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Welcome back to VOA Asia. U.S. President Joe Biden says defeating the coronavirus pandemic, both at home and around the world, is his top priority. VOA looks at how he handled this unprecedented global and domestic challenge during his first year as president, with this report from White House correspondent Anita Powell.
President Joe Biden's early days in office were marked by a grim victory for the virus. In the first week of his term, the U.S. reached 25 million cases of COVID-19. Continuing the country's dubious distinction as leading in global cases and deaths. In February, the U.S. hit 500,000 COVID-19 deaths. In April, the world hit 5 million deaths. And then, just as Americans began to vaccinate en masse, and much of the world was still waiting, the highly infectious Delta variant hit. Biden has had to balance his responsibility to his citizenry with what he says is a moral obligation of the world's wealthiest nation to the rest of the planet. In June, more than 6 months after Americans began receiving their vaccinations, the U.S. began sending out millions of vaccine donations to lower and lower middle-income nations. By September, Biden described the U.S. as the world's arsenal of vaccines, with pledges of more than 1 billion donated doses.
And the United States is leading the world on vaccination donations. We need, as we're doing that, we need other high-income countries to deliver on their own ambitious vaccine donations and pledges. That's why today we're launching the EU-US Vaccine Partnership to work more closely together and with our partners and expanding global vaccinations.
Critics say the world's richest nation can afford to do more. Some question why wealthy nations stockpiled millions of extra vaccine doses and why their citizens are getting booster shots when many around the world have yet to receive a first dose. Tom Hart leads the One Campaign, a health policy advocacy organization.
What they have done very well is they have committed more vaccines to countries that need them. They have committed more funding to institutions to help deliver those vaccines and for the PPE and other responses that are needed. They have supported sharing intellectual property. They have supported increased manufacturing in developing countries. They have used their leadership by example to good effect. And so I'm very proud of what this country has done and is heads and shoulders above the rest. But to be clear, it is not enough.
Overall, Professor of Medicine Dr. Tyson Bell says Biden gets a good grade for his efforts. But there's plenty of room for improvement next year, he said.
There are a few things that we need to do a better job of. The first is getting low vaccinated communities, encourage them to get vaccinated. And the second is we need to do a better job of getting vaccine available in low and middle income countries. And the growing disparity is now, you know, it's embarrassing at this point. You know, we're 2 years into this and we still have continents like Africa that are at, you know, 10% fully vaccinated. There's no explanation for that and no defense. And then the third, you know, really is laying the groundwork for our future response. Making sure that we have a well-funded public health infrastructure, that we have rapid response capability, that we have the ability to implement testing, and that we can separate the concept of public health from the politics that inevitably gets caught up in.
But he said this virus is a hard worker, and as the new variants have shown, it is adaptable. That means it might be around for a while yet.
I think COVID's going to be with us. What we have to do is get it to a point where it's not overwhelming hospitals. We have low hospitalizations. We have, you know, a manageable amount of deaths year to year. Sad to say it that way, but we need to be able to manage it.
The best way to get there, Bell said, is for everyone to get vaccinated. That, too, is Biden's most oft-repeated piece of advice, and one he very publicly followed in September by getting his third shot. Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
Making headlines in Asia, China under fire for approving new coal power stations as other countries try to curb greenhouse gases, has completed its first 1,000 megawatt unit of the Shanghai Miao plant, the biggest of its kind under construction in the country. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. While the COVID-19 crisis dominated headlines for a second year, the climate crisis kept intensifying. VOA's Steve Barragona has looked back at 2021's major events in climate change.
President Joe Biden's inauguration in January marked a reversal in the U.S. approach to climate change after 4 years of inaction from the Trump administration.
In my view, we've already waited too long to deal with this climate crisis. We can't wait any longer.
Biden set a target to cut greenhouse gases in half by 2030 and started taking steps to help reach it, says Columbia University law professor Michael Gerard.
The Biden administration has rejoined the Paris Climate Agreement, has resumed acting on climate change, and his Congress has just appropriated a lot of money to go to energy infrastructure, and the U.S. Is back.
But there's still a gap between the aspiration and the real actions that have been realized within this first year.
Cletus says Biden has struggled to get the biggest parts of his climate agenda through Congress and allowed fossil fuel development to continue. Meanwhile, the planet kept warming. 2021 will likely join the last 6 years as the hottest on record. Record-breaking heat and drought sparked wildfires from Siberia to the American West and Canada. Floods killed hundreds in China and scoured Germany. Extreme events are becoming the norm, says Center for Strategic and International Studies analyst Joseph Mikan.
We need to get ready for these effects to come in. They're going to be damaging. If we do our best, they will be manageable, but we need to be ready for them. And we're going to see more and more.
But scientists warn the world is failing to meet the threat. After a brief dip from the COVID-19 pandemic, greenhouse gas emissions came roaring back in 2021. Observers were pessimistic going into November's climate summit in Glasgow.
It is so decided.
But countries pledged significant emissions cuts, and wealthier nations agreed to increase climate funding to lower-income countries, notes the World Resources Institute's Helen Mountford.
We did see a lot more progress than many of us thought was ever possible. But at the same time, the second truth is that we just accomplished nowhere near enough, given the scale of the challenge and how quickly we need to be moving.
The planet is still on track for devastating levels of warming, countries committed to come back next year with stronger pledges, Summit President Alok Sharma said.
Whilst we have reached, I do believe, a historic agreement, what this will be judged on is not just the fact that countries have signed up, but it will be judged on whether they meet and deliver on the commitments.
Disasters will keep intensifying as the Earth heats up, scientists say, but it's up to us to decide how bad we let things get. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Finally on VOA Asia, 2021 was a historic year for all things space. From the success of private spaceflight companies to robots exploring Mars in a road trip for the ages. VOA's Arash Arabasadi beams us through the year in space.
This year, the world witnessed space history not once, not twice, but three times as the private spaceflight companies Virgin Galactic, Blue Origin, and SpaceX successfully launched their space tourism businesses. Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic became the first to reach the space boundary in early July, while Jeff Bezos' company Blue Origin flew a few days later and a bit higher on the anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. Among the passengers was pilot Wally Funk, who at the time became the oldest person in space at age 82. But just a few months later, 90-year-old actor William Shatner claimed that title when he also rode aboard Blue Origin. Shatner made famous the role of Captain James T. Kirk on the iconic 1960s TV show Star Trek.
If you take a step back and look at 2021, it's been a really amazing year. I think that at this point, we're kind of experiencing a renaissance in human spaceflight.
NASA's Misty Snopkowski tells VOA SpaceX's fundraiser flight for St. Jude Children's Hospital may have been the most significant of the year.
Because Inspiration 4 was successful, I think that's going to stimulate more activities in low Earth orbit and really enable more people to go into space.
The entire mission was bankrolled by a billionaire on board the flight.
Now, the private investment into space is bigger than the NASA budget. So the private industry is putting more money than the government is into space. So this is definitely, in my opinion, the inflection point for the industry.
Autry says reusable hardware makes going into space cost efficient and more eco-friendly than single-use rockets. But he adds that it probably won't be us making those first trips.
I think before you see people, though, you'll probably see cargo. So you'll see sushi coming from Tokyo to London, in an hour. And that's crazy, but I know there are crazy people who'll pay for that.
In other news this year, NASA landed on Mars. The Perseverance rover, or Percy for short, and its travel buddy, the Ingenuity helicopter, began a quest for signs of ancient life. The flight took about 7 months before a dramatic landing on the Martian surface. That's all fine, says Autry, but he says the focus should be closer to home.
We could run onto Mars, we could spend a lot of public money, and we could stake that flag there and bring back a soil sample and maybe discover life, but it wouldn't have actually done anything for people on Earth, right?
What would do something for people on Earth, he says, is eventually moving mining and manufacturing industries off the planet and onto the moon. But before that happens, NASA plans to launch its Artemis 1 mission next February. It is the first of three missions with the end goal of landing the first woman and next man on the moon by 2025. NASA's Snopkowski tells VOA future moon missions will include a public-private partnership that will drive down costs for the space agency.
One of NASA's goals is to be just one of many customers, right, in this commercial space strategy that we've laid out. And so in that goal, NASA would be only purchasing what they need as far as goods and services go.
Before we turn the page on this year, a look at Space Oddities 2021. There was the first known French crepe made in space, tests on the immune systems of baby bobtail squid, and the first ever space games. For 2022, look for more launches from the private spaceflight giants, NASA's test trip to the moon, further research from Mars, and the U.S. Mint's release of the Sally Ride Quarter, honoring the first American woman in space. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's all the time we have on VOA Asia. Make sure to find us on Facebook, VOA Asia, on Twitter at VOA Asia, and on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Jessica Stone. I'm Chris Gaskill in Washington. Enjoy the day.